Well, you know, the president, it seems, has kind of a three-pronged approach here to changing how the government oversees and deals with offshore drilling. He's proposed reforms to the Minerals Management Service, the agency that has had oversight of offshore drilling. He's appointed a commission to investigate the spill, and he placed a temporary moratorium on deep drilling in the Gulf until safety issues are better understood and addressed. What do you think of that three-pronged approach so far? Let's start with the first one, the reform of minerals management. How's that going, do you think?
Well, as you know, the existing reform consists of a proposal to separate the permitting and revenue collection and the environmental regulation, but to keep the separation within the same agency. I don't think that goes far enough. I really think that these are conflicting functions. One is promoting the industry, and the other one is environmental regulation. My feeling is there should be more separation, and that it would be appropriate for Congress to legislate a larger role for the Environmental Protection Agency and say the EPA must have a strong role in environmental regulation early on in the permitting process.
So the changes made so far, you think, don't go far enough?
That's correct. I think it's a positive step to have some separation. But the two functions, although having a little more distinction between them, are still in the same agency. And I think that if you look across the history of regulation in the government and elsewhere, that that's just not adequate for good regulatory policy in which you acknowledge that the environmental conditions are controversial within the industry. The industry will predictably use its power to try to weaken them, and that gets all tangled up in the revenue collection and the promotion of the industry. And that, well, number one, the environmental regulation should be separated. And number two, if you look across the government at the strongest possible place for that to occur, it's to make clearly the Environmental Protection Agency.
This seems to me a fairly remarkable statement coming from a past secretary of the Interior Department. You're essentially saying that shop that I used to run, they shouldn't be doing this.
Yes, but let me make clear, that's not a criticism of Ken Salazar or the Interior Department. This issue has been there through successive administrations. It has a lot of history behind it. And I just think that, sort of as our perception is quickened by this event, it's time to step out of the narrower role. I mean, I'm an advocate of the Interior Department. I believe Ken Salazar has done a strong job and that we are, witnessing an administration which now has its act together. But in the long run, these structural adjustments and how you structure regulation transcends, the current issue. And it needs to be done, I think, in a larger perspective, which leads me to conclude that even though, I have a bias in favor of the Interior Department and support for Ken Salazar, I think we'll be better off with separate functions, one of them in the Environmental Protection Agency.
And you think giving this duty to EPA will make things better? Why exactly? Why wouldn't EPA be subject to the same influences and temptations that Interior suffered?
Because EPA does not have conflicting responsibilities. They do not have responsibility to set up the process of permitting, to collect the revenues, to in effect be by through the permitting process advocating for the industry. There are two separate functions here. EPA's job is pure environmental regulation. And look, the stakes are really high here. I mean, if we've learned one thing from this, it's that the industry has changed in extraordinary ways. 50 years ago, these issues weren't terribly important because a spill in the Permian Basin in West Texas, soaked up the neighborhood and then everybody forgot about it. Then the industry moves into shallow water where they're basically setting up platforms anchored to the bottom. Now we are in a totally new world where we're pushing technology to the very limits, where the risks of an accident are not just, a couple hundred acres in Texas. They're the oceans of literally half the world once these things get caught up in currents and distributed all over the place. And what seemed like, you know, a reasonable regulatory system looking backward when the risks are much lower doesn't really look adequate. The regulation has lagged behind the risks and the pushing of the technology into these deep waters. So I think we need to take a fresh look.
Now, the president has appointed a commission to look into what happened with the BP spill. You served on a commission that looked into what happened with Three Mile Island and the near meltdown at the nuclear facility there in Pennsylvania. Given your experience on one of these commissions, what do you think this commission can achieve?
Well, I think it's an important opportunity to focus on the major structural changes and legislation to set these issues straight. And my advice to the commission as it begins is don't get lost in the weeds. There are a lot of technical details. There will be investigations on investigations, which will ultimately illuminate much of that. Focus on the big ones. My advice would be focus on the three or four, five major changes going forward in the structure of the regulatory system, in how the Gulf ought to be restored, and in forcing a safety culture on the industry itself.
Do you see evidence so far that this newly appointed commission on the oil spill is going to address the bigger questions? Because from what I've read so far, it seems to me they're much more focused on narrow technical issues about blowout preventers and such.
Well, I think it's too early to, you know, pass any judgments. And obviously, some of those technical issues, the blowout preventers are a good example, do need consideration and attention. So I wouldn't draw any premature conclusions. You know, either way, the commission is just getting started. And my thoughts are not a judgment on how they're organizing, but rather on the months that lie ahead.
Will the results of the commission arrive in a sufficiently timely fashion to influence the policy decisions that are being made? This seems to be moving pretty quickly in Washington, the response to the spill. And I'm wondering if we don't hear from them for 6 months, will it do us much good?
Well, I think the answer is we need motion on all fronts. I have talked with several members of Congress, for example, who have said, well, we have heard your proposal to, you know, restructure MMS with a role for the Environmental Protection Agency. We've heard your proposal that the other offshore players who are not currently regulated, remarkably enough, like Transocean and Halliburton, should be regulated by permit. They aren't at the present. Another proposal that there's got to be mandatory training and certification, which there isn't much of at the present time. The MMS ought to charge the industry for the cost of regulation. Now, that's the way it's done with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The expenses of regulation shouldn't be, you know, laid on the budget and the taxpayers. The industry ought to pay for it, and there are precedents for that. And then we have this overriding issue of the long-term restoration of the Gulf. Now, the president and Ken Salazar have both correctly said that the objective should be not just to have BP clean up its damage, but to seize this opportunity to restore the Gulf from all of the damage that has been done over the last half century from oil and gas development. And I believe that the entire industry in the Gulf should participate in that in the form of paying a surcharge on all of the oil and gas that comes out of the Gulf in order to fund real comprehensive restoration for all of the damage that's been done over the last half century.
Do you think there's an appetite for something like that? Because it seems to me the anti-tax mood is such that anything that smacks of additional costs for energy would be declared dead on arrival.
Well, mind you, this is not a tax. This is a regulatory and environmental principles, which says when you pollute, you got to clean it up. And it's clear that BP is going to be on the hook for cleaning up the consequences of this spill. But the wetlands in the Gulf have been devastated by decades of oil and gas production and exploration. There are 30,000 miles of pipelines out there. The wetlands have been fragmented into shredded by all of these canals that have not been properly maintained and remediated. And it seems to me perfectly fair to say that now that this opportunity is at hand, it's time for the people who caused it to pay to fix it up.
You know, I had this interesting moment when I was reporting in the Gulf. I went out on Breton Sound out of Plaquemines Parish on a boat with some scientists, and they were both looking at oil and looking at evidence of wetlands loss. And, you know, the good news on a day like that is you don't see the immediate environmental disaster, the oil. The good news is you only see the ongoing environmental disaster of the marsh loss. It's like the constant background situation is this slow-rolling disaster.
That's right. And some of it, you know, cannot be prevented. I mean, rising sea levels, for example, are going to be a real problem, and, you know, you can't hold a specific group of actors responsible for that. Some of that subsidence, in the view of many scientists, is a result of the extraction of the oil and gas. The sinking of the Delta is caused by a variety of factors, but surely one of them is the removal of all of that subterranean, the volume of subterranean material called oil and gas, to say nothing of the dredging of all of the canals. And I applaud the president's statements that now is the time to see if we can restore the wetlands. We can't restore them 100% to what used to be, but a lot can be done, and the people who caused the damage ought to pay for it.
So the president also placed this temporary moratorium on deep drilling in the Gulf until he had the results from the commission and had a better understanding of the safety issues. What do you think of that decision to issue a moratorium, and do you think it will stick?
Well, I think the decision was clearly warranted. I mean, after a disaster of this scope, in which there is clearly a mixture of a human error and inadequate technology, to say, we don't want to take any more unnecessary risks. 6 months in the sweep of things is not an excessively long period. It's a chance to look at fixes and changes that can reduce the risks. And my guess is that it will turn out to have been a good thing. And no matter how the litigation goes, there won't, in my judgment, shouldn't be any significant activity that the companies themselves are not likely to start up again in the face of all the court appeals, the possibilities of the moratorium being changed in various ways. But the president has done the right thing. He said, we're going to pause for 6 months. That really makes sense.
What do you make, though, of the argument from those affected whose work will be interrupted by the moratorium when they say, look, it was improper oversight by the government that largely led to this problem. Why should we be made to suffer?
Well, it's bear in mind that the event was caused not by the government, but by some combination of Halliburton, Transocean, and BP. Bear in mind also that there are 4,000 operations producing in shallow water out there. There are 4,000 operations. We're talking out in deep water about 30, 33, 35, something like that, operations that are affected. Now, when we're balancing, you know, if we have another accident like this, imagine the number of jobs that will be lost forever. And it's unfortunate that there's any layoffs at all. But, you know, the amount of risk offset by a six-month moratorium affecting 33 rigs, not affecting 4,000 shallow water operators, I think is a pretty reasonable course of action.
The president has also talked about the need to address the longer-term damage to the Gulf ecosystems, a lot of it from oil and gas drilling. What do you think of that? I mean, we've been hearing about wetlands loss in Louisiana for a long time now, and no one seems to have really come up with a way to address that on the scale that's required. Do you think now's the time that we might actually do something about that?
I think that it's a wonderful opportunity that both the president and Ken Salazar have been quite appropriately talking about. And that is, you know, in the sweep of history across the Delta, the damage caused by BP, as ugly as it is only a modest part of a larger trajectory of damage that has been out there, going on out there for decades through the dredging of the wetlands, all of the various spills, the use of toxic chemicals. There are 30,000 miles of pipelines. in and around the Delta, and a lot of them have not been well constructed, and it's time to hold the participants accountable, in my judgment, for funding a long-term restoration program. Shouldn't be paid for by the taxpayers of the United States. It should be paid for by the oil and gas industry operating in the Gulf. I think most appropriately by putting a small surcharge on all of the oil and gas production that's coming out of the Gulf.
A lot of people look at the spill and say, we just shouldn't be drilling at all. What do you make of the larger question there about whether or not we should be doing offshore drilling?
Well, if you look at the pattern of world oil and gas production, I don't think it's feasible to say we can't do deep water drilling. I don't see any. We've got to move as quickly as possible, obviously, to renewals. We've got to break the oil addiction. But there's a transition there that I just don't see happening without deep water oil and gas. We've already got a significant percentage coming from deep water in West Africa, coming on in Brazil, already in the Gulf. And I think we've got to manage that and reduce the risks by really ratcheting up our use of preventive technology and imposing by regulation and self-regulation a much stronger safety culture throughout the oil industry, which in many parts of it is just not there today.
As you have pointed out, the problems with Department of Interior's oversight of offshore drilling go back a long way. And I think it was abundantly clear by the time the Obama administration took charge that that office needed some big changes. Do you think the president erred by embracing an expansion of offshore drilling before he had really addressed the changes that needed to be made within the Department of the Interior regarding offshore drilling?
No, I can't say that. Look, you know, it's awfully easy to look back and, you know, say what might have been done differently. The fact is that this accident, for all I know, could have happened on my tenure, could have happened there just, you know, historically was not an appreciation of how it is that the industry had upped the risk factor by moving into deep water and the urgency of recasting the regulatory system to catch up with it. So I don't think it's very productive to look back and do a lot of finger-pointing. The administration is on top of this issue now, in my judgment. Important decisions are going to have to be made going forward, and now is the opportunity not to do a lot of, you know, sort of blame game stuff, but to say, let's urgently get on with making all of these changes, some of which will be very difficult, many of which will be opposed by the oil and gas industry, many of which will require congressional action right now, not waiting for a commission report, but right now.
Did you see indications back in the 90s, back when you were running the Interior Department, that there were problems at Minerals Management Service?
Well, the major issues 10 or 15 years ago were management of the Alaska pipeline, and we had a fair amount of skirmishes and quite a bit of difficulty managing that pipeline. And retrospectively, could this reform process have begun during my tenure? Yeah, sure. Looking back, you know, through the lens of time, I suppose all of us, various administrations, the Congress, the industry, weren't really fully cognizant of the risks that were going to be created by pushing technology out to these kinds of limits.
There is so much focus now on the Gulf. I'm kind of amazed at the level of and the intensity of public interest and public anger and public sadness about what's happening in the Gulf. It seems like a classic teachable moment, but I'm wondering, will we really learn lessons here? What do you think? Are we really going to respond and step up and do what's required here?
It is a teachable moment, and it is a really important opportunity to make major changes, to get the Congress involved in legislating changes in the regulatory structure, in portioning responsibility for the long-term damage to the Gulf and financing the cleanup, and moving quickly on the energy legislation that's in the Congress, including, importantly, pricing carbon, either through taxes or cap and trade, and cap and trade seems to me to be the most important, urgent way to go, to sort of jumpstart the movement away from dependence on fossil fuels, improving our national security, getting a handle on global warming, and using this moment to get started.
But what's your quick read of the politics on that? Do you think that has a shot, putting some sort of a price on carbon in this election year?
Well, I'm not close to what's going on in the administration or the Congress. I am a bystander for the most part. I do think there's a chance, particularly for cap and trade, because you can structure cap and trade in a way that the costs are rebated in the form of checks to utility customers and that kind of thing. I think that transition can be made with no direct impact upon consumers and very minimal transitional impact in the industry.
Former Arizona Governor and former Secretary of the Interior Bruce Babbitt, thank you very much.
Thank you. A pleasure.